हललम त्वेकरात्रेण हंसरात्रेण पुद्बुदम् दशाहेन तु कर्कन्धु क्येष्यन्दं वा तथा परम्। On the first night, the sperm and ovum mix. And on the fifth night, the mixture ferments into a bubble. On the tenth night, it develops into a form like a plum. And after that, it gradually turns into a lump of flesh or an egg, as the case may be. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The body of the soul develops in four different rays according to its different sources. One kind of body, that of the trees and plants, sprouts from the earth. The second kind of body grows from perspiration, as with flies, germs, and bugs. The third kind of body develops from eggs, and the fourth develops from an embryo. This verse indicates that after emulsification of the ovum and sperm, the body gradually develops either into a lump of flesh or into an egg, as the case may be. In the case of birds, it develops into an egg. And in the case of animals and human beings, it develops into a lump of flesh. The Jivatma is eternally part and parcel of Krishna. The Jivatma in its innate state is meant to develop through the process of bhakti its eternal spiritual body, which is Satchidananda, full of knowledge and full of bliss. A cowherd boy, a gopi, a four-arm resident of Vaikuntha, these are all the eternal natural forms that the spiritual soul manifests in its purified state. Today we are reading about what takes place when the spirit soul misuses its independence to try to enjoy rather than being content in the ecstatic nature of service. How unfortunate that all suffering is brought about by the desire to enjoy. Where there's service, there's liberation. Where there's selfishness, there's so much suffering. Today's verse, we're speaking about the traveling of such a foolish soul who's trying to enjoy separate from the service of the Lord. Whereas that living entity could be in the spiritual world in an eternally youthful, blissful body that's not subjected to birth, old age, disease, or death. Instead, the soul chooses to be in this utterly embarrassing, shameful condition where he's identifying himself as a piece of sperm And then gradually his body begins to ferment into a bubble. And then he further develops in his sojourn in material existence. And then he develops a form like a plum, but not like a nice plum that you see in the marketplace. This is a very abominable looking type of plum. And then gradually, as it's making progress, it turns into a lump of flesh. We should be gopas or gopis dancing with Krishna. Those should be our bodies. But instead we choose to become a lump of flesh in the embryo of a woman. Or, depending on our particular karma, we may become an egg coming out of a chicken or a bird of some sort. Or we may be like a little seed that just starts sprouting. Or we may just be swimming around in some abominable form of perspiration and then come out like a little insect. Hare Krishna. This is material life. Happy birthday. Everyone's so much celebrating their birthdays, but this is what birth means. You're just coming out of this kind of a situation. Kapila Dev is giving us this information for several reasons. One is, as the creator, he knows how his creation is operating. We have so many speculations and so many changing theories, generation after generation. But when the Supreme Lord speaks, he speaks with absolute knowledge. When he speaks even of material existence, he knows perfectly how it is operating and why it is operating. It is all happening by his divine will. We also can see what a expert manufacturer Krishna is. How just from such elemental objects as a slimy little piece of sperm or a fermented bubble comes a beautiful, wonderful human being. We see great athletes, we see beautiful, beautiful women, handsome men, decorating themselves in so many ways, attracting each other. But the origin of that was just this fermented bubble. Hare Krishna. How Krishna can take a fermented bubble and bring it to the point of being a human being that can create rocket ships and satellites, create computer chips, and take hundreds and thousands, millions of little pieces of data and put them into a little piece of silicone. How human beings can build beautiful skyscrapers and cities, can be so learned in so many sciences, can speak eloquent discourses. And that most inconceivable creation is coming out of a fermented bubble. That fermented bubble, what intelligence does it have? Actually, all these qualities are within the potency of the soul. the soul being 1/10,000th the size of a tip of a hair when it comes into this material existence, has within it the part and parcel attributes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then through the process of bhakti, these attributes develop. We actually are developing our spiritual body within our hearts as we take to the process of devotional service. That is what Kapila Dev is trying to convince us of. Is this what you want to go through? Lifetime after lifetime after lifetime? Or do we want to participate in the beautiful Leela of the Lord, as explained in 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam? That is our free will. So Krishna is so expert at everything. He's the most expert manufacturer, but at the same time he's telling us that this material existence is a place of misery. Abramabhubanaloka punar avatanojana mamupetu tukontiya punar janmana vidyate. From the highest planet in this material world to the lowest, they're all places of suffering. Lord Brahma has explained it himself. He's in charge of so many of the affairs of creation of this universe that we live in. Krishna empowers him to do so. And yet he's explaining that he really doesn't like to do his work because he's a Vaishnava. A Vaishnava hates to see people suffer. They're paradukaduki. Their suffering is to see others suffering. They don't mind suffering themselves, but to see another person suffering is very, very difficult. If you love someone, it's very painful to see their suffering. When we speak this word paradukaduki, we should understand what it really means. It means love. Just like if your beloved mother, hopefully you love your mother. In Kali Yuga, sometimes this is a rare phenomenon. But if you love your mother or you love your father, or maybe you even love your wife or husband, or you may love your child, and that child is suffering terribly, it's painful. It's more painful than if you're suffering yourself, because there's such a deep attachment of love. A mother is willing to accept so many different types of pains if it helps to free the child of pain. But what a terrible misery it is when the child suffers, because there's love. But this is love born of a certain egoistic conception of reality. But a Vaishnava, in a developed state of consciousness, sees every living being as part of Krishna, sees a relationship between himself and all other living entities, sees every jivatma as a brother, a master. Therefore, there's love. There's actual love for every living entity. Therefore, when he sees anyone suffering, it's worse than suffering himself. That same experience of a mother feeling pain when it sees its child suffering, extended to a very deeper, greater, and purer state, is what a devotee feels when he sees anybody suffering. Even a bird, even an insect. That's paradukaduki. It's not simply based on some philosophical, logical adjustment within one's mind that one is paradukaduki, making other people suffering his own. It's the spontaneous nature of the soul who loves every living entity because he sees every living entity as part of Krishna. That is how Prahlad Maharaj, it was out of pure love for you, for me, that Prahlad Maharaj is willing to stay in this material existence as long as any one of us is suffering in this material world. When Vasudev Dutt prayed, let me suffer hellish existence for the rest of eternity, I don't mind, but I cannot tolerate the living entities, all species of life, whoever they may be, remaining in this suffering condition of material illusion. Let them be liberated. Let me stay. He's speaking out of love. He sees the whole universal creation and every species of life and every living entity within those species as his own intimate, beloved family members. And this type of compassion is actually ecstatic. Because any particular type of emotion that is aroused out of spiritual love is a form of ecstasy. In the spiritual world, we find in the pastimes of Radha and Krishna, sometimes there's anger. Sometimes there's broken heart and weeping and separation. Sometimes there's laughing and dancing. Now, when an uninformed person tries to fathom the concept of the Leela of the Lord with his material intelligence, it's bewildering. The Vaishnavacharyas say that the great devotees of Krishna, they're always crying for Krishna. They're crying in separation. Hey Radhe Brajadeva Ke Chalalite He Nanda Suno Kuda. Six Goswamis are our ultimate idols. They are our heroes. We want to emulate their qualities. We want to become like them by following in their footsteps. And what are they doing? They're just running around Vrindavan, crying, weeping, with broken hearts. Radharani, where are you? Krishna, where are you? Are you on the banks of the Jamuna? Are you at Govardhan? Are you under one of the Kadamba trees? Where are you? So for somebody to explain this to a material person, that we want to renounce all the enjoyments of this world. We'll sit and we'll chant rigidly whether we like it or not. We give up illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, meat eating. We give up enjoying newspapers and televisions and cinemas. We give up going to dance clubs and permit rooms and all these other things. We give up these dandaras. Giving up all these things. Why? So that we can be like the six Goswamis. Weeping, crying. Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? It seems like suffering. When Uddhava went to Vrindavan and saw the condition of gopis, now if some philanthropist, Albert Schweitzer, if he were to go to Vrindavan and see the gopis just rolling in the ground, they were crying so much that they were burning in the heat of separation. If there was any body of water near the gopis, it would immediately just dry up. They were just laying there. Sometimes they would be just practically on the verge of death. That's how much separation they were feeling. Burning in the fire of separation, blazing fire. Now, if such a philanthropist were to go and see them, he would think, this is horrible. What to do? Please take some water. He'd try to raise funds to get proper medicine for them and proper facilities for them to live a happy life. But when Uddhava, who was an expert spiritual scientist, when he went and saw them, he was praying to become a little blade of grass so that they could step on him, so that maybe if the dust of their feet got on his head, he could develop their qualities. And someday I can become like this. I could be rolling around in the ground, weeping and crying in agony, suffering miserably for Krishna in separation. There you go. When Srila Prabhupada heard construction going on, devotees said, "Should we stop that, Prabhupada?" He said, "It is like kirtan because they are building Krishna's temple." So although this may appear to be suffering, actually it's ecstasy. It's ecstasy because it's born out of pure, unmotivated, unconditional love. One time, Srila Prabhupada became angry, and devotees asked, "You know, some people don't understand, Prabhupada, when you become angry like this." Prabhupada said, "That's because they do not understand the science of spiritual ecstasy." One time in Amsterdam, actually I was living at that temple for about 6 weeks, and I just had left. And just a couple of weeks after I left, Prabhupada came to that temple. It was a very strange type of temple. It was in a little alleyway, and it was in the red light district. No, you don't know what red light districts are in Amsterdam. Even Americans cannot fathom such a thing, because prostitution is legal, and they all have their shops, just like windows, and they all posing in the windows, and as you walk by, they're going like this and exposing various parts of their bodies, and you're just, brahmacharis are just Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram Ram. And all along the street there were these prostitute houses, and then they sell paraphernalia to make your sex life more interesting. They're called sex shops, and that was right across the street from the temple. It was a garage. So nice, so many wonderful devotees. Anyways, there was going to be an initiation ceremony, and the devotees, it was Prabhupada's first time in Holland, so they had the national television station, newspapers, and radios. They were all had their cameras set up to let everybody have darshan of the great self-realized Swamiji. So Prabhupada sat down for the yajna, and the devotees did everything wrong. They didn't have anything properly arranged. And the person who was going to take sannyas happened to be the temple president. So he's sitting at the yajna, and Prabhupada's just chastising him. "Where is this? Why is this?" And he became furious. He was so angry, he was just chastising. And this was on national television. And the newspapers were taking photos. And Prabhupada was really, really angry. You would not want to be in that position. "Where is this? Why is this not here? You're responsible. You're a fool. You are ignorant fool. You are a rascal." Hare Krishna. So afterward, some devotees were asking Prabhupada, you know, that was on national television and everything. He knew that already. He didn't care. He said, "They do not understand the science of spiritual ecstasy." Because actually it is ecstasy. Because he was angry out of love. In order to teach his disciples how serious it is to do things right. If you're doing something for Krishna, you should be doing it in Krishna consciousness. And Krishna consciousness means you're putting the best of your abilities, your intelligence, into making a wonderful offering. We were reading yesterday in the verse that Shukadeva Goswami is simply begging for the benediction that Krishna will be pleased with me, with what I say, with what I do, with what I think. This is the perfection of life, that Krishna is pleased with me. Nothing else matters. And it was Prabhupada's duty to train us to live in such a way that Krishna will be pleased with us. He wasn't simply a material sentimentalist in the name of a spiritualist. If he was simply sentimental, he would have just, oh, very nice. I am self-realized. I am liberated. I am peaceful in any situation. Meanwhile, my disciples are going to hell because they're doing everything wrong. But I'm peaceful. Let the cameras see. Let the world see that I'm not affected by anything that happens in this world. No, that's not love. Love is your concern with the people around you. If they're not pleasing Krishna, you have to shake them out of their ignorance so that they'll understand what it means to please Krishna. So when we read about Prabhupada's anger, we're reading about pure, unalloyed, ecstatic love. Love for Krishna, love for living entities, trying to shake them out of their conditioned state, trying to actually teach them the process of pleasing Krishna in whatever they do. It's very serious. And especially in India, people are very sentimental in this way of their conceptions of what a holy man is. Particular type of hair, particular type of disposition. Even Prabhupada, on a pandal stage, in front of about 20,000 people, started chastising somebody. Haribo, now if you do it, you're going to go to hell, because that's Vaishnava Parad. But Prabhupada was concerned more with love for these people than he was with simply his reputation for ignorant people. So anyways, after chastising this temple president for a long time, finally he said, now you come up and get your danda. And he gave him sannyas. There was no material anger in his heart. He was just trying to teach this person, and he was acting angry. Material anger is due to frustration of one's material desires. Spiritual anger is an emotion of love to try to help somebody on the spiritual path or to protect someone on the spiritual path. Hanumanji was very angry, but his anger was out of love. Gopis were very lusty, but their lust was out of love. So, Paradukaduki is the natural condition of one who has intimate love for every living entity. Srila Prabhupada, sometimes he would exhibit such ecstasies of compassion. It's hard to concentrate because all this kirtan's going on right underneath me. Let them go on. It's more important than what I'm saying. But Srila Prabhupada, in Atlanta, Georgia, when he was sitting in front of the beautiful deities of Gaur Nitai, he just began to explain how Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda have descended to this world to save the most fallen souls. And while saying that, he just went into a trance of ecstasy. Tears were shooting from his eyes. This is love. He couldn't even speak. He just said, Chant Hare Krishna, and he had to leave the temple room. The pure soul who's so dear to Krishna and so dear to the Vaishnavas is being put into this most abominable, degraded condition of existence. Instead of being in the spiritual world in a spiritual form, they're trying to be happy as a fermented bubble. They're trying to be happy as a lump of flesh. And then here we are in this world. Now we're all young or middle-aged, and we have bodies that are somewhat adequate and equipped to do so many wonderful things, to build a future for ourselves. But actually, what is your future? We only see things to a certain limit in time. We think in terms of my future up until death. People are making their arrangements for retirement. It's like sometimes you take so many bribes and do all kinds of illegal things just so you have enough money for your retirement. But actually, your real future is this, what we're reading about today. If you don't return to the spiritual world, to the process of bhakti, then you're going to die. And then, what is your destination after death? You're either going to be a little seed sprouting into a piece of grass or a plant, or you're going to just be floating around, swimming around in some perspiration. And then you're going to become an insect. Or you're going to be a fermented bubble, then a little fleshy plum, and then a lump of flesh. Hare Krishna. That's your future. That's what life is all about in the material world. If only we would understand that life goes beyond death, that the soul is eternal, then we wouldn't simply be making plans to live a happy life in this world and then have a comfortable retirement when we're old. We'll be thinking beyond that. We'll be thinking, yes, that's all right. I should arrange things so I have a comfortable retirement when I'm old. But I should also make arrangements so that after I die, that same spirit soul that's traveling through this body at this time, that it's in a comfortable situation. If someone were to come up and curse you, I curse you to be a fermented bubble, you would probably be really offended by that. But you're going to be that anyway. I'm sorry to tell you. You've been fermented bubble, and you're going to be a fermented bubble again unless you're Krishna conscious. It's an abominable situation. So before that time comes, the moment of death, we should prepare ourselves. Antakale chamameva smarman vakva kalevaram. If somehow we can just remember Krishna at that moment, then an eternal spiritual form. Forget Krishna, fermented bubble, lump of flesh. And that's just the beginning. As if you come to class every day for the next couple weeks, you'll find out
what happens in the womb once that little lump of flesh starts to develop. So many problems, so many sufferings. It's like a prison. At a certain stage, you become fully developed in your consciousness, and you can't move. Now, materialistic people, they try to create this illusory image that life in the womb is so comfortable and nice. In fact, years ago, I saw an advertisement of this company that was manufacturing beds. And that was their selling feature, that it's as comfortable as your mother's womb. I hope someone sent that advertising agency of Prabhupada Srimad Bhagavatam to read. Comfortable as your mother's womb. This is selling point. They try to make it sound so nice. But they don't know what's going on in there. And these days, in some countries, you only have a 50 to 60% chance of even surviving from being murdered in your own mother's womb. And your mother's the murderer. And they call it free choice. Women's rights. Is that paradukaduki? Is that Vaishnav culture? Because you're inconvenienced to me, even if you're my own child, I kill you? It's the last state of degradation, where even mother killed her children. And they may say that, but I haven't seen it yet, and it hasn't developed yet, so I don't really love it yet. So it's not really murder. Just give it some time. You give it some time, you'll see it, you'll know it, you'll love it, hopefully. A child goes to school. At the beginning, he doesn't know anything. Give it some time and he'll learn. Give it some time, he'll have a BA, MA, PhD. Just let it develop. But if you just say this child is ignorant, kick it out of school. Not intelligent now, get out. Doesn't make sense. It's illogical. It's logic that's simply a justification of the most abominable cruelty. Because I haven't seen it, because it's not developed, therefore it doesn't deserve to live. It's a spirit soul who has taken a human form of life that's developing. Is there any questions? It's very ecstatic kirtan going on downstairs. Can you hear where you are, or is it just me? You can hear. Very good. Hare Krishna. Yes. Yes.
Maharaj, sometimes when we preach about the ill effects of abortion, so sometimes people ask the question that in some cases when the child within the womb has contracted some terrible disease because of which the mother's life is in danger, so what should be done?
If that's actually true, then there's justification. If someone has come to kill you, then you're justified to defend your own life. Otherwise, there's no justification.
And sometimes, like, they say that if it's a rape case,
Prabhu, these are such isolated experiences. one out of probably a million is like this. And people are trying to justify the whole thing on the basis of this. Statistically, it's such a tiny, tiny percentage of people who are pregnant because of being forcibly raped. Practically everybody, they've done it because they were reckless and foolish and because they're just not willing to control their senses. But if it is a rape case, still, you have no authority to kill a person just because you were raped. Karmically, you're a murderer if you do. You can make it any justification you like. If a woman is raped and a child is in her womb, just because if you're a victim, to make another person a victim, is the court going to free you? Just like if somebody beats you up and takes your money, and then a year later you beat up someone and take their money, then you go to court and you say, well, you shouldn't put me in jail because someone did it to me, so I'm doing it to somebody else. So if you're a victim, somehow or other, by your karma, there's a child within your womb now. If you kill it, you have to pay the full karmic reactions. But that's a very isolated, rare experience. Does that answer your question? Yes?
You mentioned about material anger and spiritual anger. And you gave some examples of Srila Prabhupada. But in our practical day-to-day services, then when you have some services to do or you have to get something done, and then some devotee does not do it properly or there is some problem, and it may be a frustrating experience for the ones who's responsible for getting it done, and then there is sometimes some outburst. So, is that material or is that spiritual anger?
It depends on whether you're in material or spiritual consciousness. When a pure devotee is angry, it's pure love. Just judge. Are you doing it out of love and compassion, or are you doing it out of frustration? Do you really love that person? If you don't, then it must be mixed highly with material motives. And then it becomes Vaishnava Parad. So we should be very careful. If we use the anger as a technique, as a means to really help a person in his spiritual life, then that is devotional service. But if it's simply due to our own frustration of our own egos, which is usually the case, then it can be Vaishnava Aparad also. So we have to be very, very careful about this. Yes, Manjari Mataji.
Maharaj, we often speak of love, but I sometimes feel that we don't actually really know the actual meaning and the depth of what actual love is. And I'm not speaking of Chaupati, but in other places I'm seeing that the dealings between the devotees are greatly lacking in this most essential quality. So I'd like to have a better understanding of what love actually is, and what is it that is in our hearts, or specifically in my heart, that is preventing us from actually being really to understand what love is, and what that love is that we can give to each other and to all the living entities here.
Bhishma Dev defined love as to repose all one's affection in one object, in one person. And the only person that anyone can repose all their affection in is Krishna. So real love is to repose all our affection in Krishna. And that love is perfect because Krishna is the complete whole. Everything was within Krishna. If you love Krishna spontaneously, you must love every part of Krishna. You must love all the energies of Krishna. That is the truest sense of love. When the soul is liberated from the false ego and all misconceptions that are born of the false ego, then in that pure state, the soul has no envy, no lust, no pride, no greed, no anger, no illusion on the material level. That soul simply loves. In the material world, that love manifests very primarily in the form of compassion. In the spiritual world, it's manifest especially simply in the form of pure transcendental ecstasy in the pastimes of the Lord. So that is what we're all striving to achieve. And in the material condition of consciousness, we have to learn how to respect each other. We have to learn how to show proper affection for each other. And these are ways of properly developing our love. But to actually show love in a conditioned state, it's actually impossible. We can't really show love in a conditioned state because real love is something that's pure. It's the nature of the soul. The love of this world are different types of lust. Now, the loving relationships between devotees, they're relationships that are conducive to the growing of real love, of true love. You see, the nature of the heart is to be affectionate. But we have to learn how to dovetail that affectionate nature in such a way that love of God will actually develop from it. And if we cannot love those who are dear to God, then it's very difficult to love God. And what we mean by this is, unless we can show our love for those who are dear to Krishna, Krishna will never give us real love. So therefore, in the state of Vaidhi Bhakti, we're living our lives to a large degree on the basis of regulative principles. So as an austerity, we have to be personal, affectionate, concerned, compassionate servants in our relationship with other Vaishnavas. Whether you feel like it or not, if you want Krishna consciousness, you have to do this. There's no choice. Unless you're affectionate, concerned, personal, in your service to other devotees, as well as to the conditioned souls as well. According to our relationship with them, we have to serve in different ways, but it should be done with affection and compassion. That's part of the process of developing love of God. You can't jump over it, you can't skip over it. Bhakti means service. We have to learn how to serve in such a way that's pleasing to Krishna. And this is what's pleasing to Krishna. If you treat another devotee impersonal, cold, uncaring, you're not pleasing Krishna. You're not making advancement properly. If we just act according to how we feel, many people are very conditioned to a very impersonal, cold, abused lifestyle of the past. So if we just bring that into Krishna consciousness, and well, I don't feel love for this person, so I'll just treat them the way I feel. Get out of my way. That may be the way we feel toward most everybody. We have to recondition ourselves. Don't act according to how you feel. Act according to how Krishna wants you to act. And if that matches how you feel, that's wonderful. And if it doesn't, doesn't matter. That's how love grows. Does that answer your question?
Thank you very much. Reminds me of an English saying, fake it until you make it.
Huh. Something like that.
Yeah, thank you very much.
We don't want to be pretenders. We want to be doing it to fulfill our goal. There are people who are, as you say, faking because they want to get something material out of it. And there are others who are, in one sense, they're trying to follow in the footsteps of great souls. You could say that's faking. They don't feel it. But they're doing it because they want to get purified. They're doing it because they want to please Krishna. And someone else may be doing the same thing for some prestige, or even to exploit someone. This is one of the most expert ways of exploiting someone, is really show them that you love them, so that they trust you and they'll give you your hearts and they'll give you everything. Then you're just, one day you're gone and they have nothing left. Haribo. That happens all the time in the material world. Someone, they pretend they love you, they pretend they care about you just to get something from you. But in Krishna consciousness, even if we feel no love, we'll act as if we love. We'll act as if we care. Not to take something from you, but to give something to you. And to attract the mercy of Krishna. It's very important. We must be genuine. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.